Hey, welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. I'm your host, Steve Mileto, and this is episode 60. That's right, we've made it to 60. And today, my guest is Vicki Davis, the Cool Cat Teacher. She's a teacher, IT director, blogger, author, national speaker, and a podcaster. Can't wait for you to listen. You are going to be saying, forget summer, I'm ready to go back to school. Is it time yet? Vicki will inspire you to do more for the kids. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. I'm your host, Steve Mileto, and today I'm talking with the Cool Cat Teacher, Vicki Davis. Vicki is a teacher and an IT director in Camilla, Georgia. She is a published author and has her own podcast on the BAM network called Every Classroom Matters. Her books are, one of them, Flattening Classrooms, Engaging Minds, Move to Global Collaboration One Step at a Time, and her other one, Reinventing Writing, The 9 Tools That Are Changing Writing, Teaching, and Learning Forever. She has an amazing blog. You can find it at coolcatteacher.com, and where she shares just thoughts about many different areas in teaching, from technology to classroom management, and many topics in between. She also is very active on social media, especially Twitter, where her handle is @CoolCatTeacher. Say hi to everyone, Vicki.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here, Steve.
Well, I appreciate you joining me. And before we go anywhere, I've actually got to start with this. Where did Cool Cat Teacher come from? There's got to be a story there.
Well, I went to GAETC here in Georgia and came across an amazing man named David Warlick, who was there in 2005 when I started blogging. And I knew I needed to start blogging because I wanted to teach my students, but I always try to start, you know, with it, me learning how to do it first. So I was actually sitting there brainstorming names. I had about 40 names and was still brainstorming. And I'm like, what on earth am I going to call this blog? And we're the Westwood Wildcats. So one of my students, Casey, came up and said, you know what? You're cool and we're the Wildcats. So why don't you be the Cool Cat Teacher? And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And little did I know that more people now know my name, Cool Cat Teacher, than my name, Vicki Davis.
Nice.
So, so that was, when I give keynotes now, sometimes people will say Vicki Davis and then give the introduction. They'll say the Cool Cat Teacher. And then at least, you know, there'll always be a good 20 or 30 heads that look up at me and go, oh, that's the Cool Cat Teacher. So, yeah, my students helped me with it.
That's awesome.
Been about 10 years ago. Yeah.
That is awesome. What an awesome way to have that nickname. So, to have the kids give it to you is the best thing. Because now I'm sure that, just like you said, your real name may be disappearing as more people know you as the Cool Cat Teacher. So, that's neat.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of Vicki Davises out there, so it's probably better to have a name like that.
I gotcha. I understand. So what I'd like to do is we're going to get into a little bit about what you do and so forth. But, you know, the first thing I want to ask you is, why did you become a teacher?
Well, I just finished my 13th year, and I was teaching at a college level, had my own business and doing some title grants, and a vacancy opened up at the school where I teach now, and my curriculum director, Miss Betty, was actually acting principal. We were in between principals, and she called me up. She said, Vicki, you would make an amazing teacher, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I just couldn't imagine that. And she's like, no, the school needs you. You graduated from here. Your kids need you. These students need you. You would be amazing. And so she convinced me to try it out for 1 year. And I fell in love with the kids, you know, right from the beginning. I wasn't definitely not a perfect teacher at the beginning because, you know, that first year, we all have lots to learn, and I choose to forget that first year. But she convinced me, and, you know, I love it. I kind of fell into teaching, kind of like I fell into blogging. And but, you know, when you're committed to do excellent work and to learn from really smart people, good things happen. And I've been fortunate to come across lots of really smart people who've mentored me and helped me along on my journey.
That's excellent. It just like you said, usually that first year is just, it's all about learning. And, you know, and I wish that some new teachers would actually give it longer than, because some don't realize, I don't think they really realize that it is a lot different than what it is in the you know, being a student in a classroom to be that teacher. And so it does take time to learn who you are, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, and then the little things like procedures and flow and, you know, all of these things that are little but actually are huge. I mean, if you look at the research, the number one thing that you can improve in a classroom to have a better classroom is actually classroom management.
Yes.
And a lot of people forget that. They forget, what's my paper flow, or what's my electronic paper flow, or how am I going to keep up with all this grading? And they make lots of little decisions and do things differently every single time, and they wear themselves out needlessly. So I think that when you mature as a teacher, you start working a lot smarter, and you also invest more in the relationships with the kids. I mean, it's real easy at the end of that first year to realize that you spend all your time with your curriculum and not with your children. And when you start having great relationships with students, that's when you really start moving the needle.
Oh, that's excellent. That's, you're so right on the money. That relationship piece is so important. And I think one of the things I do is I work with teachers who struggle. I try and help them by coming and observing them and then giving them feedback and giving them suggestions. And one of the things that often is there is that they haven't really connected with the kids. And that's something that's hard to teach. but it's a big missing key sometimes.
It is, but it is very hard to teach. I don't have an answer for how to teach it except to talk about it. It's great right. That you actually talk about it. And, you know, honestly, the research shows it. If you look at, there's some great research I found in Harry Wong's book, The First Days of School, which is a book every beginning teacher should read.
Most definitely.
But it actually shows that the social relationship between student and teacher is in the top five, but the academic interactions are way below 10.
Right.
So you can really move the needle, like I said, with that social relationship versus the academic relationship. And that's just so counterintuitive. And it also, you know, some teachers use that as an excuse to goof off or whatever. And that's just not what it means either. It doesn't mean you hang out and talk all day. I mean, they can do that whenever they want.
Right.
But there is a technique to connecting with every student. I think it starts with standing at the door, calling every student by name, and paying attention and noticing, are they having a good day or not?
Oh, I love that, because it does. It's so much. That's such a huge part of it. You know, one of the things that I recommend to them is that, you know, I watch them teach, and when you see them not use kids' names, I start giving them techniques and strategies for learning kids' names. That, you know, like standing at the door, one of the things is start practicing their names as they come through the door. When they're in the hallway, you see them. You know, go out of your way at the lunch, you know, table. Go say hi to them and use their names, because using the name helps connect. Because then, hey, that person, that teacher knows your name. How'd that happen? You know, that type of thing. And that's a big part of connecting. But I can't agree with you more than the idea of developing those relationships. You're going to be able to win them over to get them to focus on the academics if you can connect with them.
That's right.
So what I'd like to do is let's kind of shift, because, you know, there's this huge technology side to you that anyone reading your blog and listening to you talk, you usually are going, like a recent one of your podcasts was about talking to someone who was talking about gaming and writing books about gaming and so forth. And, you know, and there's this whole IT part to you, because I believe you are your IT director or part-time director for your system. Is that?
Yeah. I'm IT director and teacher from a very small school.
That's yeah. what I thought. So what I'd like to do now is let's kind of shift and let's talk about, is there a favorite tech practice or app or hardware or software or freeware or something that else that you like to introduce yeah. to teachers to use with students?
Well, right now I'm very passionate and wrote a pretty popular piece on Edutopia about formative assessment. Now, I think that technology is a vehicle. You decide where you want to go and you pick vehicles. So, you know, if you're going to go across the neighborhood, you might ride your bike. And if you're going to go across town, you know, you might ride the golf cart. And if you're going to go to Atlanta or to Eastman from Camilla, you're going to probably get in a car. And so formative assessment is such an amazing technique. And, you know, Socrative, Kahoot, there are lots of tools out there, back channel chats that you can use for formative assessment. And, you know, it used to be a lot harder than it is now. And technology has given us a way to kind of have a picture into how kids are learning at that moment. For example, there's OneNote Classroom, and kids can be taking their note in OneNote, and the teachers can actually see what kind of notes are those kids taking, because you can really tell a lot about what a kid is doing by, A, what kind of notes are they taking, and then B, are they actually reorganizing those notes? Excellent. Because, you know, the process of learning is not just note-taking. It's kind of this, you know, working with the material. So I think the biggest thing that can improve student achievement the most is formative assessment, because honestly, teachers should know whether students know the material before they even give a test. I mean, gone are the days are study everything for a week and a half, give the test and go, oh no, everybody failed it. They don't know it. It should be teach the material for today, give a couple of formative assessments. I know if they've got it, I know exactly who I need to remediate with after school or before school tomorrow or before class, or who I need to call the parents to help them get a little extra help. And then tomorrow we do the next material. So this cumulative lostness that used to happen in the old way of doing things can go away if we can start using formative assessment technology tools, even Plickers. Plickers is one you can use without having any technology and just the teacher having a smartphone. So there's lots of formative tools out there, and that's kind of the one big fast win that every single school can do immediately.
Oh, I like that a lot. That's the idea of checking for understanding using those tools and using there's so many aspects to just the tools that you're talking about today. I wish I had them when I was in the classroom, because I would have eaten up so much of that. Just amazing. But I like that that focus there on finding those formative tools to help you. But so along with this, do you have a favorite way to try and engage the kids in your classroom? What an instructional strategy or a tech tool or anything?
Well, I love Dave Burgess's Teach Like a Pirate. So I always like to have a hook at the beginning of class, music, video, sometimes dressing up. There are all kinds of things that you can do to hook and get them interested, because, you know, I do believe that, you know, you've got your pedagogy, you've got your content knowledge, you've got your presentation skills, and then I think you have to have your mindset. So I think you have to have those four things to be a great teacher. So you plan and have all those things. You're constantly monitoring your thought life to see, you know, do I have those expectations? Are we aiming in the right direction? Am I customizing the lesson plans to these kids' interests? And so those hooks have to do with the students' interests. So I actually start off the whole year with an assignment that I got from Dave Burgess, where every kid has Play-Doh, and they model something. I call my computer lab the Wonder Lab. So nice. I want them to demonstrate something that's wonderful about them as an individual, and they'll model all different kinds of things, and I'll look at it and they'll take a picture of it and they actually email it to me, so I know they can email me from their device. But it starts off with really getting to know the students, because even if your curriculum is somewhat structured, our job as teachers is to personalize things. If you're just I don't think we deliver curriculum. I think, or deliver instructions. I think we engage students and we create this learning environment where they're part of it, and it iterates and we personalize. So, you know, I think that we can't be replaced by computers if we're actually using our brains. It's when teachers get the classroom in a box, they just make their copies, they check out as a human being. and they just become a human doing, that they start losing the kids, because who wants to be read, have a script read to them?
Right.
I mean, who wants to have this boring thing that's not interesting? And I'm not saying that things have to always be, quote, interesting. You know, sometimes kids say things are boring when they're hard. It's our job, though, to help hook those kids in and help them get excited. Every student should have a reason to want to come to school every day. And they want to come to school when they're interested in the person of the teacher, or when they're interested in the topic that they're learning.
I love that. Matter of fact, you've got several things right there that make great T-shirts. the idea of, you know, and the first one, I just got to say, that idea that we can't be replaced by computers if we just use our brains. I mean, that is so on the money, because I look every day at, there's so many people who think for some reason that a webinar or something can replace that classroom teacher electronically, and those connections that people make, that's where that classroom teacher creates that interest and excitement and that want to be in that class, that, you know, just talking to a screen or reading from a screen or doing something on a computer is not going to replace that. And I think that's so out of the money.
Well, and my sister is a teacher for Savannah College of Art and Design and has won several distance learning awards. I mean, she teaches graphic design to people all over the world through SCAD as a professor. And she still has a personal relationship. She's still personalizing the class. So even if it's online learning, you know, there are some kids, you can put them in a room with a book and they'll teach themselves.
Yes.
This is not about reaching the kids who are their own teacher. If that child is their own teacher, they have the world as their oyster. But we want to reach every child. And to do that, we've got to personalize, and we've got to be a teacher, and we've got to be teaching. You know, teaching is an active, you have to do that every day. It's part of who you are.
I love that. I think that in looking for shortcuts and different ways of doing it, that's what really isn't there. It's not about shortcutting. It's about figuring out how to connect with them. And that can be difficult.
Yeah.
And so just excellent. So let me kind of shift gears. Let's talk about your podcast for a minute. Your podcast is Every Classroom Matters. And just tell me a little bit about what impact you hope to achieve, and you know, where are you going with the podcast? Because I enjoy it. I've listened to many of them, and it's just I think the guests that you have on there are just an amazing different group of each one. I look forward to each one that you bring on. So tell me a little bit about what's going on with your podcast.
So Every Classroom Matters is a show for busy educators. It's just a 10-minute show. Sometimes it'll go 11, 12 minutes. And I really want to kind of bring the best to teachers, and then also really elevate teachers to know that their profession is noble. I like to find people who are not making excuses. They're making progress. And the thing is that teachers are so amazing. Like, I love finding teachers who aren't on Twitter. We have a risk on social media of living in an echo chamber. And we also have a risk of thinking everybody's just like us. And the one thing I try to do with my show is Every Classroom Matters. So if it's a best practice and it's in distance learning or homeschooling or public or private or charter or in Australia or remote Montana, I don't care where it's happening. I don't care where you teach. If you have amazing results, other teachers want to hear about it. So I like to focus on what unites us. I stay away from the politics of it and focus on the professional practice of teaching. And it's amazing the people who said they'd come on the show. And it's a great excuse to get to interview authors. And see, I'm a full-time teacher. So I was really looking for a way. Long time ago, I had a podcast with some other people called Women of Web 2, but it was an hour long and once a week, and it was killing me. And I just couldn't maintain that. But I was kind of looking for a way, the fact that I'm a full-time teacher in my local community, but how can I share? If I can only do 6 to 10 keynotes a year, you know, that's all I'm going to get on a plane and do at most. So if I'm doing that, how can I still share these stories and, you know, really improve the profession I care about? Because, you know, I'm blessed when you are on Twitter or Facebook, we all influence someone. We are all blessed to impact somebody. There's somebody that listens to each of us, and we have to take that responsibility very seriously. And educators who care, share. So I kind of feel like I can be a poster child for this is what a teacher can do if people start listening, and can I help this profession that I care about, and can I help teachers? Because there's so much negative press. There's so many negative things. There's so many things that when I read, I get upset and I just want to get offline and be discouraged about my profession.
Right.
But it's like, you know what? We need some people building content like you are, Steve, that's like, okay, these are great things. Let's talk about the great things. Let's talk about what works. Yes, let's ask the hard questions too, because we have to answer them. But let's really do some business in a way that teachers understand and relate to, because I don't know a lot, but I love to ask questions and I love to meet smart people. So the podcast is kind of my way to do that.
It's excellent. I enjoy your podcast. I love the format of it, and I'll include links to it in my show notes. And it's just right on the money with what you're wanting. And I just got to tell you, just kudos to it, because you have a very unique group that you go out there, and I like what you're talking about, because many of them are the teachers that are doing and not making excuses, like you said. I like that. That's awesome. What I'd like to ask you about next is if I could get you just to talk just briefly about your books, and because you are a full-time teacher, you've got what I'm aware of are the two books, the one about flattening and then the one about reinventing writing. So let's start with, because reinventing writing is your first one, right? Is that correct?
My first one was Flattening Classrooms, Engaging Minds. So I helped co-create this massive project called the Flat Classroom Project, which won the ISTE Online Learning Award in 2006.
Nice.
And we grew those projects to be about 3,000 kids a semester. And actually, it kind of grew past me. And I had to make a decision of, am I going to stay in the classroom or am I going to work with Flat Classroom full time? And I decided to stay in the classroom because that's where my heart is. And the person I created that with is now kind of running those projects herself. But we wrote a book about how do you create sustainable, excellent global collaborative projects, and then how do you find them that you want to join that fit with your curriculum? So I think every curriculum director should have a map of the world on their wall and should put pins in the map and say, okay, these are all the places we collaborate. So that was the first project. And the second book I wrote by myself with a lot of collaborative feedback. So I actually kind of wrote it collaboratively. I would write a chapter, throw it in Google Docs, and get lots of feedback. And that book is Reinventing Writing. And that came out of, I don't know if you've heard of the curriculum called Writing Across the Curriculum.
Yes.
And so they want every class to write. So we went through that program, and I had these two massive paper binders, and I started going through it, and it's like, okay, this doesn't apply to me, this doesn't apply to me, this doesn't apply to me. I teach blogging, I teach social bookmarking, I teach all this. There is nothing out here to help a teacher move into 21st century writing and coach collaborative writing and teach blogging and how do they create infographics. And, you know, so basically what I did is I took all 60-something different types of tools that I used in my classroom, and I wrote all of them on Post-it notes. And then on this desk where I'm sitting now, I started grouping those Post-it notes, and I created 9 categories of writing that have been reinvented by the web, and call them my collaborative writing Cloud 9. And so I kind of went through and wrote the basics of, okay, what are each of these tools and what does it correspond to in the old way? So for example, reinventing note cards is social bookmarking. So I prefer to use the words that teachers are used to, because it's not about talking down to teachers. It's about being approachable and helping teachers go, oh, okay, so you're telling me note cards, I can do all these cool things with them online if I use Digo? And then they're like, and you're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, I get why I would use Digo.
Nice.
And you do the same thing with Google Docs and with even Word, Office 365 and the collaborative features. So, you know, a lot of teachers don't know how to teach true collaborative writing or build a writing community. The thing is that if teachers will use tools, for example, like ProWriting Aid and Grammarly and Hemingway, those are free tools that can help kids do all the editing. So by the time it gets to the teacher, they shouldn't have to worry about commas or periods. It's more than grammar check. It's like grammar check plus algorithms to coach on all kinds of things. And then the peers should review it. So by the time it gets to the teacher, that teacher should be looking at draft 5 or 7, right?
Right.
They shouldn't be looking at draft number 1. And I believe that one reason writing teachers are so frustrated is they're not even getting the first draft because kids aren't even spell checking. I won't even accept work if it's not spell checked and grammarly checked if they're blogging. But we've got to get these writing communities going. We've got to get kids understanding how to use the technology that's available to them, and then really get them excited about the practice of writing. Because honestly, if you just drill commas into kids, they don't understand the content aspect. There's no reason to kill yourself on commas when we've got technology tools. Let the technology do what it does best and let the humans do what they use best. A technology can do rote, routine, you know, algorithms, and humans can use, like we said earlier, their brain. And we just want to start using technology in smart ways instead of getting stuck in the same old problems that wear teachers out, because teachers have bigger classrooms they've ever had. They have all these issues they've never had before, all these standards, all these changes. And it's just time to start saving time. And it's amazing to me how many teachers don't realize that technology actually can simplify their lives.
That's awesome. And I'm rapidly taking notes on some of those different. I can't wait to go back and listen, because you got a whole bunch of great free tools there that would be so helpful. But you're so right about the idea that there's so much to writing that's different now that you have these tools that can help you, and you can help the students become better writers that way. But it's just amazing that how much of it is not known or used. And that's awesome. And by the way, I had to laugh earlier when you were talking about, just as you started talking about the commas, because I have a few people that are helping me with some writing that I'm doing, and the first thing they notice is that, would you put commas where they go?
Well, that's my problem. And so I use Grammarly, and every week it tells me how many words I've written, and it tells me my number one mistake. And my number one mistake is commas. It just is. I want to write like I talk. And but Grammarly finds them all, and it's so nice because now I don't get those nasty emails from the grammar police that troll my blog and tell me everything I do wrong. I mean, I'm glad people will tell me when I make a mistake, but honestly, I should be able to find those with a computer, because computers are actually dumb. They do exactly what they're told to do, but when they're told to do something, they do it incredibly well.
Nice.
So Grammarly is one of my best friends now, actually.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm going to have to visit Grammarly, because I got a colleague right now it's probably writing. When she hears this, she'll be going, have you gone to that place yet? Because you really need to start working on those commas.
Yeah.
Because I like to write like I talk, too. And so then it's missing all that. And I like to use a little ellipses and all that stuff. Dots. You know, dots are my friend.
Oh, ellipses. Yeah.
Gotta love those. just that people don't like them. Well, let's shift gears as we're starting to come towards the close. And what I wanted to do is get you to, if you were standing before an audience of 100 brand new teachers, they haven't had a chance to step into a classroom yet, and they're getting ready to, let's say it's Monday morning, you know, that they'll step in the classroom, and this is the week before. What advice would you give them about starting right?
First of all, get to know your students, but secondly, really get your classroom procedures down. If you haven't read Harry Wong's book, The First Days of School, or is that the name of it? I think it is.
That's the name.
You want to read that book. You want to really ask those teachers about the flow. And then after about 5 or 6 class days, you want to kind of update your flow. Because at the beginning, your job is to really help kids master the procedures of the classroom. And procedures are different from rules. You should have very few rules, but you're going to have lots of procedures that just are going to make your life easier. And if you can learn from those veteran teachers, they can give you shortcuts that will make a big difference. And I think the other thing is to be upfront about your mistakes, to find an amazing mentor that's an informal mentor that you can say, hey, I need some advice. They've actually done research on mentorship programs, and they found that when you're assigned a mentor, it actually does not help at all. But when you have an informal mentorship and you say, okay, I found this person, I really get along with this person, could they help me? Because one mistake I see a lot of beginning teachers do is they group with other beginning teachers, and they don't take the shortcut to efficiency that way, because once I started leaning, my mom was a teacher, my sister was a teacher, so I was actually, the first 3 weeks of teaching, I was on the phone with him every night, and I would say, you know what, this was awful, that was terrible. And then the last thing is to remember that when things blow up, you can reboot any day you choose. And when I learned this, it was so freeing. So the end of the school year is really a hard time, and I think almost every teacher wants to quit then. And yes. What I'll do when my class just gets off track one day is the next day or the end of class, I will say, you know what, guys? We are rebooting either today or tomorrow. I want you to know this is not who we are. This is not how we've behaved the whole year. We're not going to do this. This is not our classroom. It's not who we are. It's not who I am. We are going to reboot, and here's what I expect as part of the reboot. And because you have to give yourself the grace to start over at any time. You can't wait to the first day of school to start over, especially your first year. You may reboot a million times, but just make sure when you do reboot that you mean it. Because consistency is your friend. I'm a creative person, and I like to do everything differently all the time. But once I learned that routines and consistency are part of what builds trust with those students and me, then I saw that, you know, I'm not limiting my creativity. I'm actually giving myself the ability to be more creative because they have a trusted framework to know what their assignments are, know how they're going to turn in their assignments, even to know how to ask to go to the restroom or whatever. And then we can just focus on the content. It's very freeing if you have good procedures. So read that book by Harry Wong. I'm a huge fan. He will just save your life. If you're struggling with discipline, read Fred Jones's Tools for Teachers. And then just learn, and try to improve.
Nice. Thank you very much. Great advice. Well, let's take the same question, although it won't be 100 brand new, but let's talk about if you had a chance to give advice to a room full of 100 principals, what advice would you give to principals?
You know, I think that teachers want the same thing that the students want, which is teachers want to feel like they matter. They want to feel like they're listened to. There are things that there's two kinds of leaders, and there's a great book that I think every principal should read besides Mindset by Carol Dweck. There's one called Multipliers, and they found that there are two kinds of leaders. There are multipliers and there are diminishers. And great leaders actually, and they don't even know how this happens, are able to get more than 100% of productivity out of people. So somehow, because they're so amazing, they multiply people, and people are actually able to achieve far beyond what that person could achieve normally. And I don't understand how it works, but the research is there. But then there are these leaders who diminish person's capability, and they found these people don't listen to ideas, they diminish the talent of others, and they're actually characteristics of that. So, you know, there's research out there on leadership, and it's a shift because, you know, a lot of times the best classroom teachers go on and become principals, and sometimes, you know, they're like Todd Nisloney and Chris Lehman, and they become amazing principals. But sometimes they forget about that relationship with the teacher. Does it mean the teacher's always right? No. It just means that they learn what it takes to lead. And then the other thing I would say is that, I'm going to read you some quotes here,
okay,
is that John Maxwell has an amazing piece called Seven Practices in Times of Crisis. And one of his is he said that tell a story in a statement. So his examples he uses, he said, Abraham Lincoln's story in 1861, the Union stands for liberty, secession would destroy the Union, and therefore secession is a threat to liberty. And Winston Churchill's story in 1942 was, this is not the end, it's not even the beginning of the end, though it is perhaps the end of the beginning. And then you had George W. Bush in 2001, they may not come to justice, but we will bring justice to them. And what John Maxwell says is that the trait of great leaders is they're able to cast the vision in a succinct way that mobilizes people, but then they're also able to tell the truth, put people first, and not to overreach. And he says, if you win, they cheer for them, themselves, not you. So be real careful about taking credit for the wins of your team. And, you know, I've interviewed people all over this country and world that are great principals, and you can't get them to take credit for anything. It's always about their amazing staff. It always is. And it's counterintuitive, but it's just true. If I see somebody who's grabbing glory for themselves, you typically see a weak person who's insecure and probably feels underappreciated, or they might even be in trouble. If you see somebody who's always talking about their staff and how great they are, you've usually found a leader, because leadership is always about those you lead. It's never about yourself.
Love it. Thank you very much. Awesome advice. And I'll make sure I have links to those books that you've mentioned there, as well as John Maxwell's Practices. That's awesome. Maxwell is just amazing. He just keys in on just so many attributes. And I love that advice that you had. And I can't wait to share this. As we come to a close, the last thing that I'd like to ask you in sharing is, do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life that if you had a chance to thank that person, you would? What would you say? Who would it be?
Well, the teachers who've made the biggest difference, I'm still in contact with. Betsy nice. Caldwell, who taught me how to write, teaches next door to me. Miss Atkins is our 83-year-old full-time learning lab director, helped me use a computer back in 1986 when I didn't have a high enough SAT to go to Georgia Tech, which is where I wanted to go. So, you know, she knows how I feel about her. She's a mentor of mine. And then my favorite professor from Georgia Tech, Dr. Phil Adler, he's 92 or 93.
Oh my gosh.
And he and I touch base pretty often. But the thing I say to all of those is that just my gratitude that they pushed me. Dr. Adler called me in, and at the point, midpoint, I had a B. And in college, as hard as Tech was, I typically was an A student. And I had a B, and I was just flipping out. And he looked at me, and he said, and my name was Adams at the time, Vicki Adams, you're not getting an A unless it's your best. I don't care if you're better than anybody else in this class. My question is this your best? And he called my bluff, because honestly, as soon as I felt like I was ahead of others, I would stop. And he's the first person my junior year who called me on it and said, Vicki, you know, basically, you're in a race with yourself. Are you going to accelerate? Or are you going to take the fact that it's kind of like Secretariat, you know? Secretariat was amazing. But one reason he was so amazing is that when he pulled ahead, he didn't stop. So I want to be a Secretariat. I want to compete with myself, and the results will speak for themselves. And I think that mindset of I want to pull ahead and compete against myself, am I leveling up a little every day? My strategy of innovation is innovate like a turtle. I don't have a lot of time, but I can move forward a tiny little step every day. And that's how, you know, I've been able to accomplish the things I've done, as well as surrounding myself with brilliant people. Leaders are readers and readers are leaders. So I try to read an hour a day. And I try to honestly have a growth mindset and look at my weaknesses and set goals. I also listen to my students. And that's one characteristic all three of these teachers had, is they listened to their students. They didn't always agree with me, but they listened to me. So teachers are wonderful, and the great teachers are life-changing.
That is awesome, Vicki. I can't tell you how inspiring, how powerful your words are today, and I thank you so much for sharing with us. As we close out, can you let people know how they can connect with you or find out more about you, where they can find you on the web?
I'm at Cool Cat Teacher everywhere. So you can look me up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, all those places. I do write for Edutopia. But when I write, I'll actually put a link on my blog at coolcatteacher.com. And they can email me at Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, at coolcatteacher.com if they have anything to say. I do get a lot of emails, so I have somebody who helps me with my email. But she knows that teachers always get directly to me. The vendors don't always get to me because there's too many of them trying to get my attention, and I'm not for sale. So, you know, but the teachers, they can always get to me, and I love hearing from teachers because that's who I am.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing all that, and thank you for spending so much time with us today. It's been awesome having you on the show, and you just have such amazing energy and words of supportive advice that, you know, just there's so much to share and learn from you, and I appreciate it. I'm excited about everything that you're sharing. I can't wait to have this out there for everyone to listen and learn from you. So thank you again so very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it, Vicki. You have a great afternoon.
Okay.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.